with experienced networkers and business owners, Jill Russell and Linda Cloak. At Absolute Protection Group,
we specialise... Do you need a reliable property management service or lettings agent? PJJS is a well-established property management and residential lettings company in Maidstone, Kent, which deliver an effective and efficient quality service. Call us now on +44 78 55 746 966.
So for everyone who's listening, I had auto on, so it was just going blah, 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 and everything was all playing all at once. My guests are all looking at me thinking, what is she doing? So I'd like to introduce our guests to today's show, the networking show with Synergy Networking Events. So our first one is Ali Whelan from Bags of Pack Travel.
Hello, great Hello. To be here.
Thank you for coming on. And then Peter from PJJS, who's been a guest before.
Good afternoon. Look forward to talking to you.
And you're also a sponsor of the show?
I was. Oh, I am.
You are? That's right. yeah, your advert will be playing soon, I think. It's just played, hasn't it?
It has.
And then we've got Mark Inman of Newman Business Solutions.
Hello. Good afternoon.
All right. So I'll guide you in everything. I'll be asking you questions and then we go from there. But Mark is an avid networker, so perfect guest to have on the show.
It's been building the last couple of years, so enjoying it.
Good.
Glad to be here, yeah.
Good. Okay, excellent. All right. So as you probably heard, the first song was Holiday by Madonna, a classic, really. So let's talk holidays. And I'm so sorry about this, Ali, but I've got to go in with the fuel issue because it's right across the TV today. People's holidays are going up in price. They've just paid their last payment and bang, the airplane companies are saying you've got to pay some more.
Yep. Unfortunately, it's just one of those kind of byproducts of everything that happens in the world. And it's one of those that, unfortunately, we can't really predict. We can't really determine which way it's going to go. It is very, very tricky when people have paid their full balances. And now, of course, the surcharges are going up. Mm. It does kind of come back to one of those age-old things, though, which is the old terms and conditions of what you're booking when you do book. And I mean, let's be honest, how many of us really read, you know, the small print of what it does say? But and that unfortunately is one of the avenues that they can kind of like get you on is the surcharges, because it's not really anything that the suppliers can predict or do anything about. So, you know, at the end of the day, some people sort of say, well, why have I got to pay it? You know,
it's not their fault, really, is it? If you looked at petrol prices a year or fuel prices a year ago, I mean, look how much it's gone up. It's gone up ridiculously.
Yeah.
If someone said to me, would you mind driving me to Birmingham? I'll give you a tenner. Last year, I might have said yes. This year, I'll say no. You can give me 20.
Absolutely. But I think the other thing to remember on all of this is that generally headlines and some of the stuff that's going out on social media there's a lot of scaremongering going out, and there's also a lot of sort of clickbait headlines. The headline says something which everyone goes, oh my God, I must read that. Mm. And then when you click it, it's not actually sort of the full story. You know, everything at the moment is very sort of sensationalist. And, you know, this whole thing about, there's only 6 weeks left of aviation fuel and things like that. Most of the suppliers, most of the big airlines have protections in place for that sort of thing. You know, it's not like all of a sudden in 6 weeks there's just going to be no flights, you know, there's no flying. Yes, they will start to consolidate flights, which does become a little bit of a problem for everybody, because what they'll do is if they've got a part full flight, they'll cancel that flight and they'll move everybody from that flight onto any other flights that they've got available that have still got capacity.
Makes economical sense, though.
Of course it does.
If you're running a business.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
I mean, my mum, bless her, she always used to say, you know, I do not understand why they charge so much money for coffee in these shops. I used to say, Mum, they've got to pay the rent, they've got to pay the staff, they've got to pay this, they've got to pay that. And she said, well, I suppose so. But she said, but it only costs me this much for a jar and I can make that many cups of coffee. So it depends really, I suppose, what, you know, what you do in life. And how you look at things, isn't it, really?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, it all makes my life a little bit of a nightmare.
Yes.
The list of changes, you know, everyone moving from flight to flight and various sort of like changes to people's holidays. But
and would you still advise that people book early? Because I'm tending to book later now.
At the moment, there is a massive trend for people to be booking a lot later. It used to be a few years back, a last-minute holidays were quite a big thing.
Mm.
Then people over the last little while have started to look quite a long way forward and have been booking. I mean, I've got clients that have been booking it into 2028. Some of the suppliers now are even doing into 2029. Wow. And there was a bit of a push to people doing that. With everything that's happened over the last little while, there's been a complete flip back now at the moment.
Mm.
Last minute bookings are up 60% at the moment over the last sort of month or so for myself and my colleagues that I work with. So last minute is definitely big at the moment.
Yeah, but it could all change.
However, booking in advance, depending on what type of holiday it is, if it is something like a big bucket list trip or, you know, it's for a special occasion or it's quite a long haul flight, you know, quite a long haul journey or something like that, booking in advance at the moment is still a good bet because you're going to, as far as you can, lock in today's prices. And year on year, of course, everything, you know, does go up. So if you have got a big one that you want to do, getting it booked in now is still good advice, I would say. If it's your standard sort of like yearly
getaway,
package holiday, that sort of thing, last minute at the moment is there are lots of good deals coming out at the moment for last minute.
So what about staycations then? So can you help people with staycations?
I can do UK, yeah, as much as I can do anywhere else. I've got some lovely lodges, you know, little hot tub getaways. What places that you can take your dog as well. That's a biggie. People love taking their dogs with them. So
anywhere where you can't have dogs.
No hot tub.
So, so staycations, certainly I can help with that. And when the weather's like this, because it's beautiful here today, isn't it? When the weather's like this, I can see a bit of a thing at the moment is a lot of people are going to think, oh, if we're going to have a great summer, we'll stay at home. Whether or not that will translate to we're staying at home but travelling somewhere in the UK, or whether or not that really means staying at home and doing a back garden type summer, I don't know yet. But
depends whether you work. I mean, I work from home, so, you know, I've got the office now in the living room. It's not even upstairs.
Yeah.
So I tend to sort of, I'll watch something. If I'm bored, I just get up and go and work.
Yeah.
You know, well, which isn't a good thing, really.
Well, and is that really giving you that holiday experience, that break from, you know, if you stay at home and just do days out and things like that, which is what I did when I was a kid. I mean, that's what we always did,
yeah, we
when
did
I
that.
Was a kid.
Mm-hmm.
But you're still at home. Does it really give you...
No, I don't think it does.
Like a holiday?
No, I think you need to get away. Yeah, definitely. So tell us why you went down this road. Why did you start doing travel?
Oh, why did I start doing travel? I've had a very eclectic career history over the years. I've done lots and lots of things. The last thing that I was doing, I was in HR. I've been in HR. I still dabble with a bit of HR, and I've been in HR for about 20 years now. And I essentially took voluntary redundancy in 2020, just as we kind of started to come into COVID. I'd already signed on the dotted line to say that I was going, and I was about to start my own learning and development and coaching business. And then we went into COVID. And so, of course, there was no training, no going into offices to train people and things like that.
But there was no travel either.
No, there was no travel, no. But I wasn't involved in travel at that point. My direction was literally the learning and development. And as I say, that kind of went out the window. And when I picked back up after COVID, I realised that actually my heart wasn't really in the learning and development.
So why was your heart, do you think, in travel?
I've always loved travelling myself. As I say, when I was a child, we didn't do much travelling at all.
Mm.
We, you know, it was always, I think Great Stone was our go-to holiday destination. I think we got very excited. I think we thought it was very glamorous when we went to the Isle of Wight for our holiday.
And we never got there.
We never got that far.
No.
Oh, no. You'll have to go. It's quite sweet there. But I always wanted to travel, and because we never really had the means, because we didn't really do it when I was a child, it was just something I always wanted to do. And I spent an awful lot of my time kind of dreaming about holidays, planning holidays, you know, going online and sort of like working out if I could, I'd do this and this is where I'd go, and creating my little dream destinations. But also doing it for other people.
Yeah.
Other people were sort of saying, oh, I, you know, I'd love to go somewhere, but I don't know where to start. And I'd be like, I'll do it. And then someone said to me, do you realise you can do this as a job from home? And I was like, no. So no, I didn't realise. I thought to be a travel agent or to be a travel consultant, you had to be working in a shop or something. And I didn't want to go down that route. And so I looked into it and I found that, yes, you could do it from home. And I was like, yay, you know, this is it. So, yeah, it's been a bit of a learning journey from there. Mm. But
so yeah. Tell me the biggest one that you've organised, you know, the most people maybe.
Oh, the most people is probably the one that I've just done very, very recently, actually, which is, the biggest one I did wasn't exactly the most exciting one to do. Was a stag do for it started off being 30 people. By the time they actually got to going, that it had whittled down to about 17 people, so there was lots of changes. It was a nightmare to do that. I always vowed I would never do another stag do.
And that's organizing events.
And it was to Benidorm, so it wasn't the world's most exciting of destinations for me personally. Not the most exciting of destinations. Recently, I've just done an extended family holiday, much more exciting, 8 people, they're going to Finland. They're going to Lapland. And they had a very specific idea in mind for the type of accommodation they wanted, and so we sourced the accommodation, and then it's a case of...
What did they want?
They wanted a very much a villa style, a chalet. They didn't want hotels. They didn't want, like, you know, the whole family to be spread across different rooms. They all wanted to be together. But they wanted somewhere quite stylish and quite high-end. Mm-hmm. So we got the accommodation sorted, and obviously then it was looking at the flights. But the key thing in Lapland, of course, is your activities.
Yes.
So... booking them a reindeer sleigh ride with a trip to the reindeer farm, a husky sled ride.
Oh, wow.
Northern Lights safari, snowmobiling, you know, all of those things that are just going to make their holiday. So that's been a fun one to do. That's just very recent.
That sounds amazing.
Yeah.
So if you were to travel anywhere, what's your list? What's your bucket list for travel? I bet it's huge, isn't
it? Every time I book something for somebody else, it gets added to my list. That's the problem.
Yeah, because you've got to sort of look into it, haven't you?
Yeah, and I look into it and I go, oh, that sounds awesome. That's really good. I mean, I don't do cold and I don't do snow. I'm certainly not skiing. I would break both legs within about 10 seconds. So I don't like snow. I don't like cold. I don't like ice. But even this Lapland one, I was like, oh, I might like to. I might like to do a short one there. So that's got added to my list now. So my list's just getting longer.
So what's top of your list?
Well, marked off the top one literally last month. So top of my list was India, and finally managed to get to India last year.
I'd like to go there.
Oh, it was fantastic. It was absolutely...
Peter goes to Australia regularly because he's got family there, and Hong Kong.
Yeah, yeah. Vietnam and Cambodia are next on my list. Japan, it's high on my list. Pretty much, I mean, there's so many. I'd love Australia, New Zealand. I'd love to do all of them. But
have you got anywhere on your bucket list, Peter?
Got many places.
So that you'd like to go to? But, I mean, because you spend so much time obviously going and seeing your son and your daughter, does that leave you any time to be able to go and do these other things?
Not really. It's something I'd have to do. You know, think something outside the box. You're right, going to see my family is a priority.
Mm.
I'd like to go to Vietnam, Cambodia, because it's unknown. And China. I'd love to go and see the terracotta China. Soldiers.
Oh, there's some lovely tours China at the moment.
But have you watched the cross-world races?
Yes. Yeah.
And the Chinese one with all the provinces.
Yeah.
Well, I haven't seen
exceptional.
That.
That really is exceptional.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can imagine those oriental places really fantastic. Mark, what about you?
Daddy's already said it, actually. Yeah, Japan.
Japan?
Yeah.
Why is it there in particular?
Because I haven't been there yet.
Right.
But Asia's actually my most favourite part of the world to visit if I can go back anywhere. I've been lucky enough to have been to Thailand and Malaysia, and just Asia's my favourite place. But Japan, yeah, you know, history, the trains as well, they're so well interconnected with the trains. I'm trying to coerce a friend to go in there at the moment who's, yeah, fairly wealthy, can go off on his own and do
it. Why don't you take your wife?
No, I wouldn't go with him. I'm just looking to send him on his own.
Oh, I see.
He's got some money. Yeah, I wouldn't go with him. But I'd like to go there, but my wife wouldn't. But yeah, Japan's got a lot to it. It just fascinates me. So
sadly, at the moment, they've got a tsunami.
I heard that, yes.
Yeah, seriously.
I did hear that. So,
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Well, fortunately, I'm not going, yes. So,
no, okay.
Fortunately or unfortunately.
I have actually just finished booking a trip for two young people who have always wanted to go to Japan, and they're doing a completely bespoke tour, and it does look
what time of year would they be going?
They're actually going in January.
Because my son goes with his two boys skiing in Japan.
And I mean, because the sort of apple blossom season is not really their interest, and everything just goes sky high price-wise at that time of year, because it is the most popular time of year, and that's sort of March, April, May time. They're going in January because they can get so much of a better deal. It will be quite chilly there. Mm. It will be quite chilly in places. But it's that nice crisp chilly. You know, it's not that damp, soggy chilly that we get. So they're quite excited to be going in January. So, yeah.
I think going anywhere is nice as long as it doesn't rain. I don't even mind the snow, but when it rains, a couple of times when we went to France skiing, it rains and the slopes are all like icy and you fall over everywhere and injure yourself. Yeah, it's not good.
No, not much. Snow. No.
But snow is lovely. No. The snow is lovely. So tell me about the type of client you like. I mean, we've all got our favourites. I just like people turning up. What's your one?
My favourite types of clients, there's kind of two ends of the spectrum, really, I guess. In very simple form, my favourite type of client is somebody who can answer my questions quite clearly, so I can get a good picture of what their expectations are, what they want to experience when they're on holiday. They don't necessarily need to know exactly the destination and all of those sorts of things, or a particular resort or whatever, but I need to understand, what do they want to feel when they're on holiday? What's the holiday about? Is it about relaxing? Is it about going out and seeing culture and seeing sights? I need to understand that. And sometimes people are just like, I want to go somewhere hot and this time of year, whatever time of year. And I'm like, that's too broad. So I like it a bit when people do have a bit more of what is it that they're really good clients, because then I can go, okay, I can see what it is that you want. I've got your vision. Now I can go away and find it. So they're lovely. My other favourite, I guess, is probably the people that want to do the bucket list trips, the people who want to put something a bit special together. They do tend to be, for me, they tend to be the sort of 50-plus market, the people that have got a bit more time potentially. Maybe they're a bit like myself, didn't travel when they were younger, want to sort of spread their wings a little bit and explore some of the sort of exotic places in the world. But they want to do it in a way where they feel kind of safe, comfortable. They want it to feel familiar, even if it's not familiar, if that makes sense. You know, they kind of want to feel like they're not totally out of their depth. So they want to feel like they're being kind of looked after a little bit. I really enjoy working with those types of people because we can create some really, really nice stuff for them.
Yeah, I can imagine that. What about lone travellers? What about lone travellers? What is there out there? I mean, there seems to be so much more out there for lone travellers now.
There is, absolutely. I mean, a lot of the escorted tour companies are actually putting on sort of particular tour dates that are totally for solos. So everyone on the tour will be a solo if people like that. Some people who travel solo don't want to just be with a lot of other single people. They just want to sort of be
hang out with the married couples.
Yeah, hang out with whoever. But yeah, I think the industry is really starting to realise as well that they've got to be a lot fairer if they can with solo supplements, because that's the biggest stumbling block.
Yeah,
is it's almost like, you know, oh, you kind of almost got to pay for two people to be on your own, which you kind of get, because they could be selling if it's a cruise, they could be selling that cabin for two people. And having a double cabin price. So it whether or not one person's in it or two people are in it, they want the same amount of money.
The thing is, I mean, I've heard some hilarious stories from when I was running the dating agency of people who've been put in a cabin, you know, with somebody that they didn't know.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Some I can't even share on radio, but I mean, it was some of them were just hysterical.
Yeah.
And we got one chap who absolutely loves travelling, goes all over the world on his own. And he's just one of these people who can just go up and talk to anybody.
Yeah.
And that, I think you need that sort of skill set if you're going to travel on your own.
Yeah. Or you need to be in an environment where you kind of gradually get encouraged to do that, I think, as well. So, I mean, Virgin Cruises are one of the first to be, they actually have solo cabins now.
Oh, Peter.
They actually have solo cabins. There's always one. yeah, as I say, they have solo cabins now, which are at quite good prices. So there are moves being made. And as I say, a lot of the escorted tour companies are starting to put on tours where they do keep the supplements as low as they can and open things up for people. And, of course, quite often the last minute factor can be quite good for solos, because if they've got space and they can fill it, they sometimes will drop those supplements down a bit.
Yeah, so Virgin's quite a good one to look at.
Virgin is, I mean, but a lot of the escorted tours as well, as I say, they're quite good.
Okay. So how can people get hold of you, Ali?
Okay, so I am on LinkedIn.
Okay, under
Ali Whelan.
Ali Whelan on LinkedIn. Yeah. I was looking under Alison.
No. Yeah, there's always a little bit of, I've kind of gone through a couple of iterations in my life. At one point, I was working with somebody else called Alison, so I got shortened to Ali because I kept getting her emails and it all got a bit confusing, and she was very senior, so I had to go to Ali. And then I was known as Ali, and now people are starting to revert back a little bit to Alison, and it's all getting a bit confusing.
But it's Ali Whelan on
LinkedIn. Ali Whelan on LinkedIn.
Yeah.
On Facebook, it's Ali Whelan is just my personal profile, but that's open to anyone to follow. Sorry, excuse me. And then I have a Facebook page, which is Bags Are Packed Travel.
Okay.
That's on Facebook. WhatsApp, I've got... is the easiest way to contact me. It's always the easiest way to contact me.
Mm-hmm.
And I do have my website, which is www. Do we still do that?
Yes, we do.
bagsarepackedtravel.co.uk.
Okay.
So I've got my website there. So.
And I just want to ask as well, what made you come up with the name Bags Are Packed Travel?
Because every time someone goes on holiday, one of my first questions to them is always, have you packed your bags yet? Or like, have you done your packing yet? So I just thought, bags are packed to travel. You know, it's. I didn't want it to be sort of, you know.
It rolls off quite nicely, actually.
It was open enough, and it's one of those things. It doesn't matter if it's business travel, have you got your bags packed? Doesn't matter if it's leisure travel, have you got your bags packed? Doesn't matter if it's UK. Doesn't matter if it's abroad.
I've got to say, I'm a lastminute.com.
Are you?
Yeah, afraid so.
Yeah.
With everything.
Within reason.
Oh, that's fantastic. Thank you so much, Ali. And thank you so much for coming on the show. That's amazing. And we'll play some of the videos and things that I've taken on our TikTok and Instagram channels.
I do have Instagram and TikTok, but I don't really use them that much. I pop bits on there, but I don't really focus on
them. Well, I will tag you in.
Thank you for inviting me down.
You are welcome. Okay. So I'm now going to speak to Mark Inman.
Wow.
Who accosted me in a car park.
I did.
After a Chamber of Commerce event.
It certainly was.
So we've known each other for a long time on LinkedIn.
It's like since 2008 or something.
Yeah, which is crazy, isn't it? So I was running another business all of that time.
You were.
And I was a regular attendee at the Chamber of Commerce, actually. That's where I met Peter, at the Chamber of Commerce.
So, I'd never seen you at one until that day.
Yeah.
But it was just because your car was parked next to me.
Yeah, how weird is that?
Good opportunity.
And it's sign written.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yes, yeah, so you knew it was mine, yes.
Yes, I did, yeah. Yeah.
So tell us about Newman Business Solutions, because, you know, it's changed, hasn't it? Because back in the day when probably we first connected on LinkedIn, was it just large format printers? Was it just, you know, for schools or has it always been lots of business solutions?
No, it started out, Newman Business Solutions, it's a family owned company. It was founded in 1980, mm-hmm. so 46 years in business. It started out, so I'm told, providing typewriters, dictation machines as well, the old fashioned tape ones, the transcript machines, people that would put the cassettes in and operate them with a foot pedal. And then transcribe those voice notes. And it just kind of evolved as time's gone by into office technology. I think it's, again, always dealt with copiers, printers, scanners, which, again, back in the 80s were all separate units. As time's gone by, they've evolved, all formed into one machine now.
Mm.
And, yeah, just generally office technology now. We have an IT division. We do business telecoms. We have an office copier printer division. It's the part I work for, and an AV division as well, audio visual. So, yeah, we do everything.
Yeah, the audio visual is what interested me, that you've gone into that, because that's a whole new different game, isn't it? So lots of people are having the big TVs in their reception areas, aren't they?
So, yeah, the big screens, screens of any size, in fairness, are used in business for a variety of reasons. There are two types of screens that we're a sharp business partner. Two types of screens that Sharps are big into, interactive screens and display screens. Display screens are used in places like, for example, catering. They'll have menus up and up on the wall, displaying product offerings and pricing, etc. You'll go into, talking about travel actually, airports and bus stations and train stations. You go to look to a screen for information.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Street advertising, screens are everywhere now. Estate agency, businesses use screens to show the public what they do as they're passing. And so this is all kind of, that's what display screens would be used for.
So some estate agents, yeah, I noticed, they'll have the screen actually in their window.
That's right, yes.
And they display they change the house, don't they?
That's it, yeah. It's a way of showing multiple screens, a lot of detail, the screen resolution now, modern screens, 4K, 8K.
Mm.
The quality's fantastic. It shows it off. It's bright. It's vibrant. It stands out at night.
Mm.
It catches people's eyes. And it's a way of displaying a lot of information in a much smaller space because, you know, with the old window cards that a lot of estate agents, in fairness, and I'm not knocking estate agents for doing it, by the way, because we deal with plenty of them.
Mm.
There's still a place for it. Mm. Not everybody wants to look at a screen.
No.
Some people do want to look at them individually as they choose to, and sometimes a screen will go too fast through a menu. But that's the display screens. You then have the interactive screens, which are touch screens. These are computers that go onto walls. They start at 40-inch. They go up to 98-inch. And people think of them as meeting room screens. At their most basic level, that is, yeah, what they're used for. Some firms display things like news on their screens in reception and waiting areas, things like that. But interactive screens.
A lot of hotels will have the interactive screens to what the restaurant is, click here to look at the menus and stuff like that. I've noticed
when I went
that
to Malaysia back in 2012, they were using them then for exactly that.
Yeah.
So, yes, perfect. Thank you.
Wow, in 2012.
Yeah, when I got married.
Oh, was it? Oh, was it a honeymoon?
It was a honeymoon, yes, it was. Thank you very much. Yeah,
lovely.
Yeah, but that was a huge screen. It had a great point, Annie, and thanks for raising it. Mm. Yeah, it was a big 98-inch screen. It had hotel information on it.
Yeah.
It had local information on it where you could get buses, taxis, trains,
good
restaurants.
Idea.
Yeah. Yeah, it was fantastic. And I have spoken to a number of hotels here in the UK, actually, trying to get them to go down the same route. I don't know why. You kind of get some hesitancy. Maybe it's money. Maybe they don't want to spend. But
the thing is, that's the thing. It's cost effectiveness of what you get back in the long run. Definitely. You know, and that, you know, it's better than getting everything reprinted again, having to go to all the suppliers and ask if their prices have changed. No, it's all automatic.
And from a customer perspective as well, sometimes people are, especially, you know, abroad and things like that, don't always want to go up to the reception and ask the question of where is this or what is that or how do I do this? And if they can just go up to a screen, press a button and it says, this is how you can order a taxi or book a taxi, or this is how to book a table in the restaurant or whatever. You know, some people.
And lots of the when we were in Egypt, I went there with my friends and they had seven different restaurants, and you could go there and you could choose which restaurant you wanted to go in. You could actually book it. Yep, you had to book it under your room. But
so that would be an interactive screen.
Yeah.
Gennaro Ali does. She does make a good point. In fairness, actually, we didn't win this business, but I did recently talk to a travel agent about actually putting screens in their windows.
Yeah.
These were actually hung from cables from the ceiling, so they're kind of suspended right at eye level.
Yeah, yeah.
For people to see them, yeah. It was a sad we didn't get that one, but, you know, you don't win them all.
No, you don't win them all. Well, sometimes you learn lessons from the ones you don't win, don't you?
And you know, that's so true, yes. So if I had a penny for every time I've heard that.
I know. Yeah. If I had a penny for every time I'd experienced it.
Fantastic. Yeah.
So which bits do you like the best? What's your favourite part of the business?
Do you know, there's so many parts of it that I do like, actually, because whilst copiers and printers is my bread and butter, I came into it in 92 when a copier was just a copier, and I fixed them for 2 years, and then I moved into selling them. There's just so much of what we do now, to be honest with you, because copiers and printers, they're still a big part of many people's businesses. Paper usage is in decline. Is in decline, but it's got enough left in it to see me out. Paper's going to be around for a long time yet.
Yeah, I still use it.
Yeah, but what you see is the younger businesses, the younger people starting the newer businesses, they start out with no paper and they work with no paper.
Wow.
It's the older businesses that still use lots of paper.
Do you mean the older businesses or the older people?
Well probably, well, in fact, the older people older than the older businesses. Yeah. There are a lot of software solutions that we offer as well that go on there with the MFPs that actually help.
MFPs?
Multifunction product. Sorry. Okay. Yeah, multifunctional product.
Mm-hmm.
Scan solutions. You know, even businesses that aren't creating lots of paper still have to work with lots of paper.
Mm.
And moving those documents around their businesses, is something. Automating the process is something that we help people with. That's what I get excited about.
Mm-hmm.
And probably a great example, as I think I've talked to you about in the past, is a logistics company. They create, when they get a consignment that they have to move, they create a document pack and they put into that document pack every piece of information and document relating to that consignment. So these can contain bills of lading, emails they even print between various different parties, hazardous materials information, various certifications, etc. And at the end of it, they want to scan these. Because of the volume they move, there are thousands of them. And they used to have somebody stood at a machine scanning these document packs, then going back to their workstation, renaming them, and then filing them away. We work with their software provider to create barcodes and QR codes on the document that identify which part of the business it belongs to and where it belongs. So the software that we installed on the MFP actually reads these QR codes. And
that's a multifunctional product.
Yeah, thank you, Linda. That reads that QR code and barcode.
Mm-hmm.
So it knows where to actually, what the document is and where to put it. And OCR software reads the document and extracts information from that and actually applies that as a file save name.
And OCR is?
Optical character recognition.
So optical
character recognition.
Wow.
It reads a document. It's going on to the second point of where I was going with this. So that client now just simply walks up to a device with a document pack, a consignment pack. They put it into the feeder. They hit scan and that's it. It gets sent to the right place where it needs to go in within their IT systems. And it gets called the correct file name as well.
So that person who first invested in that, look at the money they've saved.
Thousands.
Yeah, absolutely, in time spent doing all of that.
And they saw that, by the way, as well, because in many businesses, staff costs are quite often, if not the highest, the second highest within many businesses. So why would you have a human stood at a machine
Well, and if that human is off sick for a week, then, you know, it just piles up and you've got a massive pile to sort out at the end of it, haven't you? So,
now, going back to that part on the OCR there, now, on documents that many businesses create within their company, OCR's actually already done that. Those documents are text searchable. So if you're looking for a particular reference within a document, on documents you create, that feature's already there.
So you could search like a snippet?
So this particular firm, for example, they had an auto logistics division, and they moved cars around, tens of thousands of them, both nationally and internationally. They have to keep these documents as well as records for many, many, many years. If you can imagine, I mean, some of those document packs, by the way, were really heavy, 500 pages thick.
Wow.
Yeah, that's a ream of paper. Just one consignment.
It's a lot of trees.
Yeah. Mm. It's, if you can imagine getting a query like, you know, in 6 years' time on a vehicle that you moved, you know, back in 2019, and having to look through a 500-page PDF to find references to this one particular vehicle, that would take forever. On documents you create yourselves, that feature's already there. Where it quite often isn't is on documents that are scanned. And this system carries that out. So it's about fast retrieval of information as well now. You can open that 500-page PDF, put in a registration number, and within seconds, like, have the results back as fast as what you're searching for on the web. And if there's more than one reference, you just click into next. So
you're finding that there's – because what you don't know, you don't know. I mean, I'm just thinking, listening to you, I'm thinking, oh, I could do something like that for my emails, you know. That goes – if it's, like, from them, it goes into accounts, and if it's from them, it goes to here, and they're – and then I can go into certain files because I've got the files, but sometimes I'm a nightmare at, like, filing them.
What you're talking about there, in fairness, is kind of just technology as a general. It's funny because I spoke to somebody this morning about parking receipts that were emailed to her, and I have a particular folder for that app, and I just file things away in there. But winding back to what we were talking about, the printers and the MFPs, it's not just companies that are creating lots of paper. Businesses still that have to process paper. You know, they will have customers that send things in by paper. Paper's still a big part.
You must have loads of people because you've got the estates, so it's dealt with by the people in the houses. So they're not going to have presumably have a photocopier. They're going to have, like, piles of paper.
Well, they do. I mean, whenever we send out a service charge, that goes to the individuals. But I think what you're saying, the QR code, is a brilliant way of people retrieving data. Once they start using it. But in my line of business, we still are using paper quite a lot.
Love it. You carry on as well, by the way.
Yeah, we still use photocopiers.
Print away. Yeah. Print too. In colour.
I print in colour.
Yeah.
Yeah, a lot. Mm.
Fantastic. People should. If you're marketing, this might help Ali, well, or Peter as well, actually. A lot of people, you know, are put off by colour. They think it's expensive. They're scared of it. Something that's printed in colour is 7-8 times more likely to be read than it is if it's in black and white. As much as I do work in sales, I'm a consumer as well, and I get things put through my door. And I get some, well, it doesn't matter where I live, but...
What about emails?
What, printing of emails?
No, I mean emails. Do they get read more if they're in colour? I just wondered the psychology of it.
It's an interesting one. I don't have any experience with that. So, but no, I think from a magazine perspective, if you're looking at a magazine, if Ali's trying to sell something, a holiday to somebody, it's far more likely to be interesting and red.
Yeah, you don't want a grey sky, do you? And if it's blue in a black and white picture, it's always going to be grey, isn't it?
No, it's very much that. Create the picture, that people
image.
To imagine that they're there type thing. But but you'll also be very pleased to hear that one thing that I do is I do always still, and this might just be me, again, being maybe that little bit sort of like, you know, 50 plus bracket.
Nothing wrong with that.
I always tell my clients to take photocopies of important documents with them, so their insurance documents, take photocopies of their passports with them.
I do. Yeah.
Don't just have them on their phones, but make sure they've got a hard copy with them in case they need them. So trying to do them a little bit for the photocopying.
Fantastic. Carry on.
Oh, brilliant. So, Peter, can I just ask, you know, you've got quite a few staff, and what things do you use in your office that you, I mean, would you consider having a well, you haven't got an office. They all work from home, don't they?
They now work from home, yes.
Mm.
But in terms of systems, we now use a software called Resident. And it's now developed by somebody who's in Tunbridge Wells, who actually has their own system, and they keep running the estates running with the system. Very good indeed. And it's leaning more towards the financial side as well. At the moment, with the previous software that we've been using for a long time called Focus, that was purely to do with management of properties. This is now leaning more to provide financial information to the directors that we manage on the estates. So, yeah, it's far more informative in providing that information.
Right, okay. So you were talking about the software for logistic companies. What different types of companies do you do the software for?
So, well, that was just one example. I mean, in fairness, the idea of putting barcodes and QR codes on documents, it works across all businesses. Nothing unique to logistics. That was just somebody that we picked up on. And I have, I don't know if vertical marketing is the right word to use there, but I have taken that to other logistics providers, because you'd be surprised, in fairness, I deal with a clutch of logistics firms. Some work in international, some work in national, and some will just work kind of locally. Although they're all in logistics, the same industry, they work in many different ways. I've taken that product to them, extended it in some and shortened it in others. But the idea of putting barcodes and QR codes on documents is not unique to logistics. Any business can do that. And if businesses do want to kind of make it easier to process paperwork within the business, you can talk to anybody. You could talk to a resident, I'm sure, actually, about doing that. If you just think about identifying document types, I guess you could take it down to, well, you can take it down to an individual level. It's not new. It's been around for years, but only the big firms have been using it. Years back, I was involved in a car accident and the solicitor sent out a document pack. And when that pack came through, it had barcodes running down the side of the document. That was so that once you filled it all in and sent it back, they simply would put it through an MFP, multifunctional product.
I forgot.
And that would send off the relevant pages to the relevant individuals in the business. You know, the kind of crash investigators, the underwriters, the solicitors. That's what they were there for. But as with most things, in the fullness of times, it kind of drips down, runs downhill to us.
Yeah.
For want of a better description. And I'm sure Peter could benefit from, he doesn't need to speak to us about it, he can speak to a resident about that. Yeah. The software providers will do that. Where we will help is with them actually processing that paper through, getting the machine to recognise the completed documents and send them around. So
with all this new stuff, like since you started in 2008, I mean, how have you, it's been so much to learn, hasn't it? I mean, it's been a lot of changes. Has it been quite gradual and you've just sort of, you know?
I'm just lucky to work with some good people, I guess. I've been with Newman 14 years and it's a good company to work for. It's not perfect, but it's far more perfect than many of the other firms that I've worked with. At Newman, there's just a kind of desire, I suppose, to help people along, you know, like, look, did you realise this existed? You don't have to do that way anymore. You can do it like this. I haven't had to kind of teach myself. I just work with a good bunch of people. I don't know how it all does it, by the way. I just know that it does do it.
That's all you need to know as a salesperson, isn't it?
Well, I know most of how it does it, actually, thinking about it. But in the technical stuff in the background, I don't need to know.
Because people do ask those questions when you're going out doing sales, don't they?
They do, but Peter's, you know, like we're sat next to each other and looking away, and I can see he's probably thinking, like, God, don't you want to actually? That does sound quite sensible. The technical side of how it does it, I don't know. I wouldn't know. But the business process side of it, I'd be more than happy to sit down, explain, and go through. And it's good. But as paper usage comes down, that's where the AV side comes in, by the way, because that's where technology is moving. Eventually, in the future, people won't use paper.
No.
And the screen technology, that's the growing and expanding market. That's why I do the two.
Okay, so how do people, tell me what type of customers you're looking for to start off with. So, you know, are you looking for people in logistics or?
No, anybody. It's we.
You
deal
can't
with,
say anybody. Can't be specific.
Well, no, because in fairness, I work with a guy. Sorry, who runs a publishing company from a summer house in his garden. He's just got one of our office MFPs in his garden out there. Yeah, we deal with large multinationals who have machines not just all over the UK, but we've even had machines abroad as well that we've organised for people. So, yeah, we'll work with everybody in that respect.
Hospitality?
Yeah, hospitality.
Hospitality, you could probably go in there, put the screens in, the multifunctional doodads.
Do you know, people normally come to deal with us. They don't come to deal with us for all things. They come to deal with us certainly initially on one product group, and they talk to us, they find out that we do these other things. And, tell us about that.
Mm.
And then before you know it, I'm not going to name drop, but there are hundreds of clients of ours that we do everything for, all of their IT, all of their telecoms, all of their copy, print and scan systems. We install screens for them. We even source furniture for people. I've even been asked about door entry systems today, actually, as well, by the way.
So you do IT?
Yes, we do.
So do you do that in-house?
Yes, we do.
Right, okay. And telecom systems?
Yes, we do. Yeah, all of those, yeah.
So when you're at a networking event, how do you... Do you focus on one thing at a time? Because we're just about, funny enough, to put out some resources to members, and one of them is going to be breaking your business into little chunks of information. I mean, you've got loads of little chunks of information.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so when you go out, do you focus mainly on the printers because that's where you've always been, or do you find that you just see how the conversation goes?
Thank you. Yeah, you put the words in my mouth there. I probably naturally, because I've been in copiers and printers for so long, that's where my first port of call is, but most people don't want to talk about that now. And I get that. I don't even want to talk about it. but sadly, we have to. So, yeah, it comes up somewhere. But, you know, yeah, you'll get talking to people and they'll tell you about a particular business problem that they're having, and you'll find yourself just naturally falling into, like, well, you know, we can help you with that as well. So, yeah, we have an IT division. There's about 45 people work for Newman. So we have an IT division. So we sell hardware. We do support systems, cloud services.
Do you outsource?
Not that I'm aware of. Everything is taken care of in-house.
So when you do, so I'm doing something now for a new member. So when you go in and somebody moves office and you're doing all their IT and you're putting lovely screens up for them, providing the new printers and that,
mm-hmm.
What do you do if they say, well, we want the office designed before we go in and we want it to look pretty?
Now that is something that we don't do for people. We're not into office refits and fit outs, if you like.
That. It's mm-hmm.
I'm sure we work with people that could help with things like that.
Mm.
But I'm thinking as we're talking, you know, there's a firm up in the Medway area. We started out supplying them with copiers. They were referred to me by somebody else. I think they had about seven small desktop devices,
mm-hmm.
Like the Brother machine, actually, that I saw out in the corridor here.
Oh, okay.
That seems to cost a fortune to run. No money is made on the sale of those machines. The money is made on the consumables, the inks. So I was referred to them. I went along and saw them. We worked out how much they were spending. I said to them, well, look, you know, do you realise you can have the faster, better machine that does more and actually save you some money, and you'll have a support package with it as well. And they were like, oh, that's fantastic. So I think they've been with us now for 7, 8, 9 years, but the things have just grown with them. We do their phones for them now. They asked us about Microsoft SharePoint. They had Dropbox mailbox set up that mm-hmm. were separate and segregated, nothing really kind of joined up, and just being in there talking to them about it, they said, God, this is a mess. And I said, well, you know, we do IT, we do Microsoft SharePoint. We designed their site for them, implemented it, moved everything over for them, and now it's all in place and managed. They can take care of it themselves. Mm. Now it's all set up and organised.
Mm.
So just on a one-off cost basis for them, we did that. So
do you do a standard, like, you know, looking after people on an IT basis where you have a monthly contract thing to look after them if they can ring you and then you dial into their computer?
We on the IT side, I'm aware that we do three packages. Non-contract, so you don't have to have a contract. You can pay as you go. Full contract where, yeah, everything's covered.
Mm-hmm.
But I think to sit in between, I believe, we have a system where people can buy blocks of time. Because if you want support, but you don't want a contract, our system always has to honour our contract customers first.
Mm.
What happens if you want support fast, but you don't want to be in a contract? You can buy blocks of time in advance. So you were kind of almost on contract. You've paid in advance for your time, so you'll be treated as a contract customer, but you aren't actually locked into a contract.
That's
so
clever, isn't it?
It's very clever, yeah.
So, yeah, we're an IT division that does that. We've got a business telecoms division that do, hard phones, soft phones, landlines, business mobiles, broadband, lease lines, all of that.
Wow.
Copy printer scanners, and then, yeah, as I said, the AV as well, the audio visual.
So. And the thing is, a lot of time, people don't necessarily know what they want if they don't. They don't know what they don't know. So absolutely. Until you come talk to them, they're kind of like, oh, well, I didn't know something existed that could do that. So you can join those dots for them, can't you? Yeah.
And I'll be one of those people one day.
So a last question really for you, Mark, is how do people get hold of you if they want to help with their business solutions?
Okay. I'm on LinkedIn. I think I'm mark.i. More just protect my identity from fraudsters, really, than anything else.
No, you're not
hiding anything. they can contact me at Newman. Can I put the number out?
Yes.
I can do, yeah. 01892664155 or via the website, Newman, NEWMANBS, which is for business systems, by the way, .co.uk. It's newmanbs.co.uk. Or come and talk to me at a networking group.
Yeah. So, I mean, you attend quite a few. So tell me how many networking events you attend.
A lot now. Yeah, we do. Well, I'm not going to mention the other groups.
No, go on. I'll be mentioning them later.
Yeah, okay. It's Kent Invicta Chamber of Commerce, Seven Oaks Chamber of Commerce.
One of my favourite ones.
Yeah, Synergy.
That's my favourite.
I do like Synergy.
That's all of our favourites.
Yeah.
I say to everybody that is of the event organisers, I don't know that there's one networking group yet that has all things for all people, which is why we do all of them. But I do actually like your scheme that you run, the 3 minutes on the table. Mm. None of the others do that.
No.
And I would say that the message, sound like I'm plugging Synergy now, but I would say that your message of what you do, the concentration of the message is far higher at a Synergy event than it might be at anybody else's.
Mm.
Because at the others, and again, I'm not going to point the finger at anybody, but people tend to kind of do stick to their own groups, stick to the same people that they've. You do get the odd person who's the extrovert and will come in and like, hello, but largely.
That's hard, isn't it? It's hard for people if they have to feel that they have to break into the.
I mean, I'm confident, but I do find it hard.
I'm confident, yeah. But I don't. Necessarily like if, you know, just walking up to people and just going, who are all talking, and then going, hi, it's me.
Well, I do like the questions. They do break the ice.
Definitely, yes.
Come into
it. I've actually had people coming up to me now, probably in the last few months, complaining that some people are not answering the questions and saying, you know, we want to get the most out of the networking. Why are they trying to sell to us? And it's like, so at the beginning of every meeting, I'm saying, right, this is what you do. But someone said to me at the Tuesday morning networking in Canterbury, I think you need to start educating people on why you've got the questions. And they also suggested that we make it two questions instead of three. What do you think about that?
So etiquette. Educate them on etiquette.
Yeah. Yes, that's right. Yeah, because some people just want to sell and they don't listen.
I tend to find, from my experience, that if I'm on a table where there's a lot of people who have never met, then it ends up being more like a 3 minute. This pitch. Is who I am and what I do, and I have to, you know, I have to be honest. I do that. Whereas if you're on the table with people that you've maybe met before. You then start using the questions because that adds depth to what people already know about you, if that makes sense. But I did find that I actually reflected on that a little bit after Tuesdays, and I thought, yeah, I normally do use the questions or at least one question, but I did fall into a little bit of the trap this time because I was talking to people I'd never met before of who am I, what do I do?
It was actually a new person that came up to me. So it's the first ever event, and they came up to me and said it was great. The first two tables, we answered the questions. And so obviously he didn't know anyone in there because he was new. He said, but then the last table, everyone pitched. He said, and I was quite like, he said, I was really taken aback. it's something we've got to look at. He said about doing an education spot, a bit BNIE.
Yeah, I don't know about
I know. So, yeah, but it's interesting, isn't it? Because the thing is that it's interesting to listen to feedback from members. And I think, you know, you've got to take on board what members say a lot of the time, haven't you? You know.
Definitely. No, I like the format of your shows. The your events, sorry. Yeah, they're organised. You give people instruction. Just networking as a rule, by the way, sorry, as a, you asked about the, how do I feel about networking? It's just a nicer way to do business, nicer way of meeting people.
And you get a nice cup of coffee. In
most places. Yeah. Not everywhere.
Funnily enough, our evening one at Rowe, well, actually, the pastries at the Granville were absolutely amazing, weren't they?
They were.
Freshly cooked savoury pastries, and they were really lovely. That's in Canterbury on a Tuesday morning.
I think I've still got a couple of little quiches in the, fridge.
Yeah, because they were freshly made. I mean, you could take them home and put them in the fridge, which is nice. And then we do an evening one at Rowe Hill Grange. We're there on the 30th. And I don't know if you've seen the video of the food there. It is amazing. I mean, you can go there and you can, don't worry about having dinner. You can go there and have your dinner. It's really good.
I've stayed at Rowe Hill Grange. It's very nice.
Yes.
2012.
Oh, 2012. That year.
Yeah. It's nothing to do with the wedding, though.
No. Oh.
It's something else.
Oh, thank you so much, Mark. It's really good to hear more about the business. And, I mean, I've learned something more about it today as well.
Thank you.
And obviously we bump into each other at networking events.
We do.
So can I just confirm, so you just do Synergy and then the Chamber. Is there the only one? Are there any others?
Kent Invicta, Seven Oaks Chamber, Synergy. They're the three that I do, but you know my colleague Helen.
Yes.
I mean, wow, she's everywhere, yeah. There's loads of Chambers of Commerce.
There's lots of ladies' events she probably goes to as well.
Ladies' events, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Lunches. I do two lunch clubs as well, actually. I'd forgotten about
that. Do you do the Mates Own Lunch Club?
No.
All right.
I did them in Tenterden, actually.
Oh, okay.
Very nice restaurant down the road, Italian restaurant.
Nice.
I'll talk to you about that off air.
Yeah, okay. Sounds really lovely. Yeah. Well, there's a Maidstone one that I used to go to. Mm-hmm. I think it's run by one of the solicitors in Maidstone, Precious, maybe. And it's
excellent.
Not
too many lunch clubs, though.
It's at Moomoo's.
Not as big as a house, yeah.
I know. Really nice food there, though.
Can there ever be too many lunch clubs? I'm not sure.
Yeah. Okay. We're now, listeners, going to have a little bit of a comfort break. And guess what we're going to play? We're going to play Life in Technicolor, because I thought that was a really good one by Coldplay for Mark. So that's the song that we're going to play. And... and then we'll come back and we'll speak to Peter, and then we'll speak a bit more about networking as well. So bye for now.
tired of IT headaches? Slow computers, security worries, lost files. Sound familiar? We've got your back. As Kent's leading IT support partner, we keep your business running smoothly, securely, and stress-free. Call 0179-534-2362 now and get your IT sorted.
That probably wasn't appropriate playing that advert straight after you've been on there.
There's plenty of business out there.
Yeah, Tom from IT Manager Services is actually one of our sponsors. So okay. His advert plays every single time we're on. So yeah,
fantastic.
So yeah.
There's a big market out there.
Yeah, absolutely. So I just want to, before I go to Peter, I just want to ask you to say to Ali about what you were just saying about, because I think it's quite important that listeners know about it, because I didn't understand any of it. What was it? What was you talking about, Mark? What little word, Annie?
The EES.
Ah, the EES, yes.
Well, yeah. What does it stand for? Does anyone know?
Oh, my goodness.
European Entry System or something, maybe?
Yeah, that's it. So, European Entry System, yeah.
Okay, so yeah. What is it, and why is everyone being asked about it?
So it's the new registration system that if you are a non-EU person, essentially you're only, there's time limits now that you can spend in Europe in any given period. You're allowed 90 days in every 120. You're allowed to be in Europe. So in order to, whereas you used to go in, you used to get your passport stamped, they'd be able to see by those stamps how long you've actually been in any European country. But obviously that's quite a difficult process. Everything's being automated these days and everything's being centralised. So now what they've brought in is machines that read your passport, but you've got a fingerprint system. So the first time you go into Europe, you have to register your fingerprints. So you have to go up, you have to put your finger, you have to follow the, you know, it says do your thumb, do your fingers, all this lot. And it registers your fingerprints.
Wow.
So then every time that you go in and out of Europe, once you've registered, it's a lot quicker because you just normally have to give like one finger or a thumb or something like that. And they'll scan it and then they'll scan your passport and it will log how many days you've been in a European country to make sure that you don't stay longer than you're now allowed to.
Can I just add, I think once you've registered, it's, the registration lasts for 3 years, I believe.
About that.
When you say the country, is it any European country?
Yes. So the first European country that you go into, you'll have to register all your fingerprints and do it that way. But then after that, within that 3 year period, when you enter, you'll just be able to sort of, you just follow the instructions, scan your passports, and then sometimes they'll ask for just like one of your fingers.
But what I'm saying is, could this be France, Spain, or anyway?
Yep. Absolutely, anyway.
Portugal, we were talking about whilst you were out in the room, yeah.
Yeah, Portugal have had a very, very big long queues trying to register people, and it's been taking a long time to get people through the airports. I think Tenerife and Lanzarote have also had a few problems at times with the just volume of passengers trying to get everyone registered. It is taking a long time. So,
is that from the UK or when you're abroad?
It's so that will happen when you're entering into.
So, because we're not in the EU, are we? So
no. So when you get to, for example, when you get to Lisbon Airport, as you go through immigration, rather than them just stamping your passport now, you have to go through this electronic system.
That's got my brain going in whole other directions. I mean, the first thing that went into my brain was these 80s films where they, the thief goes through and nobody knows who he is. And then you've got the, we let anyone in and we're all being scanned to see with our fingerprints. Probably less I say about that, better. Right, Peter. I'm going to actually do a little video of you telling me exactly what your business is. So tell us all about PJJS, please.
Okay, so you mentioned earlier on about our office, which is quite a big establishment.
Mm.
Back in COVID days, we ended up having to go home. So I got IT to set everybody up with computers, telephones, VoIPs, mail system and everything. And then we went back to the office. Then we had to go home again. So that's when we decided this big office environment, do you really need it?
Mm.
Because most of the work we're doing is office environment or is it from home?
Mm.
So we then decided to start working from home. Mm. And I have to say, it's been very successful.
Good.
We do meet, we have a team meeting every Monday morning and we talk about all our estates, all the properties, everything we need to talk about. And then we're there for about 2-3 hours.
Mm-hmm.
And then we depart. And then we either visit the sites or look at different issues. Going on to the property side, something you mentioned earlier on about the QR code, we actually, the very first thing I do is set up a budget. And this is within 6 to 8 weeks of the first financial period.
Mm-hmm.
Having set up the budget, we then get director approval. They agree to what the costs are because it's your costs for the next financial year. So everybody has to contribute to it. And it covers insurance details, cleaning, gardening.
So this is when you're running a block management,
yes.
Looking after a site.
So when we do that, we then issue the service charge. Then we have the issue, if somebody doesn't pay, it's called credit control. So we have a very big credit control system. And many years ago, we used to use a firm of solicitors. I won't give their name, but they're very good. However, they do charge. And they used to charge monthly. Now, when you have a small budget and it's those costs start racking up, you think to yourself, where do those, you know, where do you put the budget? So we have now a firm of Brady's, and Brady's are very good. They charge at the end on a success-only basis. So when we have to take somebody through the legal system, after many attempts of communicating with them, we then end up going legal. No communication with us from there on, so we don't have to get involved with discussions of what comes back to us.
So are you like, so I just want to clarify to the listeners what your business is like. So is it like Golden Homes on a smaller scale, like, you know, a housing association? Because they sort out the gardeners and pay for the lighting and...
All estate, all management, block management companies are exactly the same.
Right, okay.
We do that. So we cover all the aspects of, from the finances to debt control to the managing of the estate. And the other thing we look after is a five-year plan to make sure we maintain the property as well.
And who employs you?
Right, so very good question. They are the directors of the estates. So the estate will actually decide, or the directors will decide, who is the management company.
Yeah, they'll appoint you.
So what if somebody moves? I mean, say somebody who's like leads it moves, then they have to appoint somebody
tenant,
else.
I guess. I think that's what we're getting at. They're the tenants. They're not the owners of the building.
Right, okay.
The owners of the building, I think.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, the leaseholders are the people who live in these houses or flats.
Yeah.
They form what they call an RTM, right to manage.
Mm-hmm.
They then appoint directors.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the directors who then appoint like a managing agent. Once they appoint the managing agent, we then take control in terms of the financial side,
mm-hmm.
in terms of the management side.
Mm-hmm.
We don't employ trades direct, but I think I've been to a couple of your meetings
mm-hmm.
where I've been asking for trades.
Mm-hmm.
So we're looking for about 3 trades of each discipline. And because quite often...
What disciplines are they?
Plumbing, all the way through lead work, roof work, carpentry, drainage.
Well, funnily enough, I've got a meeting with KCC Trading Standards on Friday, and we're talking about doing a trades-based networking event. That might be interesting for you to come along to.
Okay. So we do this, and we set up, and we make sure all our insurances are up to date.
Mm-hmm.
So if any issues happens on the site, and unfortunately we end up having to sue somebody, we've got to make sure their insurances are up to date. Otherwise, they could walk away and, you know, the risk is very high for our own directors.
Mm.
So, yeah, so that's the principle of the estate management.
Mm.
So that's something we look at. Something I thought you would ask me about is the letting side, which we also do as well.
Yes, yeah.
Well, on the 1st of May becomes the new Renters Act.
Right.
That completely that changes everybody in terms of you can no longer have an AST, which is the associate, the assured tenancy agreement. It's now a periodic agreement that comes in as of the 1st of May. There are made major changes. And one of the things is when normally we have a 6-month or a 12-month agreement, it's now a 2-month rolling agreement.
Oh, gosh, that's not long, is it?
No. So this is what the Labour Party have brought in. It's, in all fairness, there's some good things that have come out of it. One of them, and I don't think many people will like this, is it's called the Fair Rent Act, which as of the 1st of May, if anybody's underpaying their rent, you can actually say we now need to consider the Fair Rent Act. So whatever the rent is at the time, the communal or the going market rent, you can look at that. I mean, we have some...
Who determines that what is fair?
Well, it's what the market conditions are. So you look at the market, and what's happened over the years, as you will know, people have actually, because of the issues with the insurance, because of the government taxation, people are having to charge more on their rent to recover costs.
Mm.
The rents have shot up, and I say within the last 5-6 years, I wouldn't say they've doubled, but at least, you know, they've gone up 20, 30, 40%. Really excessive.
I only own 25% of mine, and I've noticed that other 75% is now overtaken the 25% mortgage. More than doubled. Yeah. It's more than double now what the 25% mortgage is. Well, I suppose that makes sense because it's 75%. But
We have many tenants who are paying what they were paying back in the 2021, 2022.
Yeah.
So we could use that rather than going back and saying under the 6A form where you charge people the normal rent, which is a maximum 10% increase.
Oh.
You can now look at the Fair Trade Act.
But how is that going to affect some people? I mean, that's going to be massive.
I'm afraid so. Yeah, it will. Because people are paying £600-700 3-4-bedroomed house.
Oh, is that all?
And if you look at the market conditions, you could be paying £2,500.
Yeah, a lot more. Yeah,
considerably more.
I mean, that's going to – will it help the person who's maybe got one or two houses? You know, will it help them? If they've got one or two houses that they're letting, will they be able to do that as well?
Substantially.
Yeah.
I mean, as of the 1st of May, the Fair Rent Act will actually kick in and people will actually consider that.
And maybe that will help some of these people.
I mean, you've got to be fair and reasonable. You can't just go ahead and say, right, you're going to double your rent as of the 1st of May.
No.
You've got to look at the market conditions and then approach the individual and say, we need you to start talking to us about the rent.
Mm.
And that is one of the good things that I think has come out, the Fair Rent Act.
Mm. Well, Mum and Dad lived in Germany for a long time, years ago, and everyone over there rented. It was more a rental culture than it is here. Here is more about everyone wants to buy. But sometimes you wonder if it's worth buying and tying yourself to that amount. I think it probably is with the increase in house prices.
So that's the thing with the renting side. But coming back to estate management, we manage quite a few estates. In fact, going back and something you mentioned about the travel side, I mean, I was involved many years, I mean, a bit of an entrepreneur.
Mm.
I was involved with First Choice Travel
many
years ago. And I think you were involved. We saw a bit of skiing over the many years, something that we really enjoyed. And, you know, you see various things. And as you say, when you go through these, luckily I was sitting back watching what was going on, you know, the bucket list. And I think I said to you earlier on, confidentially, about the Northern Lights.
Mm.
That's certainly on my bucket list as well.
Lots of people's, but lots of people's.
We can see them in this country now, though, can't we?
Not the same.
Not if you go to Scotland, I suppose you could see it. But coming back, and one of our estates we have been managing since the early 90s, and we still manage that particular estate.
Oh, that's great. Where is that? What town is that?
Maidstone.
All right.
It's actually in Maidstone. It's all to do, again, our background is more to do with the development side. We've been developing houses over the years. So that helps us when we start looking at properties. And this is what I'm saying to you about the maintenance that we require as well. So we do this 5-year plan to make sure we maintain the property as well. So, I mean, things do slip through, don't get me wrong. But we try and even... I think a couple of years ago we were looking at a property and the rain issues back in 2-3 years ago were so severe. I mean, we're talking monsoon weather. You know, after 3 days of constant rain, the gutters don't catch anymore.
No.
So we started to look at deep flow gutters. It doesn't 100% help, but it really provides a lot of rain coming off and down into the drain.
And a lot of the new estates have got those big, like... tanks, haven't they, for the rainwater?
Harvesting it, collecting it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And And they fill up when it's like that, don't they?
Well, that's the whole idea.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sinkholes. And people use them anyway for allowing drainage to go into.
Okay.
So they do provide that. So, yeah, so our very first estate, we actually got called in because there's a roof issue.
Mm.
And we went to look at it, and it had only just been built by McLean's many years ago. And, of course, they're being bought out by Taylor Wimpey now, Taylor Wimpey. So we went along and had a look at it, and it was a resin roof. And it had been constricted in the hottest day of the weather of the year. And it became porous.
Mm.
So as soon as it rained, it leaked like a sieve. So we went and we said the only thing you can do is to cover it with felt. And that felt has still survived today, even though it's a 25-year guarantee. Then we found out there's various issues with the estate. They hadn't been paying their service charge.
Oh.
McLean's came to them and they were going to sue them for about £8,000-9,000 and they hadn't got the money.
Oh.
So I ended up saying, look, we need to get all the money together, 30 flats, get all the money together. We will put it into a reserve account. And if we have to pay it, you've got to pay it. Mm. 6 years later, never came after that invoice.
Wow.
So we actually said to everybody after 6 years, we'd distribute the money back to everyone.
That's decent.
Nice. That's happened a couple of times now.
Good man.
Yeah.
Wow. So what's your favourite, you know, block management, letting side, which is your favourite side of your business? Which do you enjoy most?
Well, every day is different.
Mm.
And that's why I really enjoy. I'm looking at the legal side in terms of there's one particular case, and I can't give you too much information at the moment because that may end up going legal.
Mm.
But, you know, things I need to look at constantly. So going through the budgets, I enjoy doing the budget work. I enjoy looking at the service charges coming through and the building work, which I thoroughly enjoy. So I tend to get more involved if there's construction or type of building works that we need to do. So it's more to do. I mean, many years ago, I was, in fact, my background as a Freemason,
mm-hmm.
one of the buildings I look after, I'm a bit like a superintendent of works. I look after that particular building specifically internally, and something I really do enjoy. So, yeah, listed buildings. It is certainly a grade one listed building.
Is that the one in Maidstone?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So things like that, and that got me involved into the property side because my background is more mechanical engineering with Babcock International.
Mm-hmm.
And I moved into estate management. So, yeah, I thoroughly enjoy it.
So are you pleased you went down that route rather than sticking with first choice and going down the travel route and travelling around the world?
I think, like most things, I really get involved at the detail. And then once the detail's gone, I sit back and think, I need to do something else.
Mm-hmm.
And that is what happened with first choice.
Mm-hmm.
Many things I look at and I go, I really want to get involved with that. Get it involved, go through it, make it work. Now I want to sit back.
Mm-hmm.
Do I want to sit back? No, I want to move on.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I end up doing.
Mm. That's good. It's interesting,
yeah.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
Can I just say, actually, I mean, I've lived in rented accommodation in an apartment block, and we had a management company that were meant to look after the building. So we didn't own the flat that we lived in, or apartment.
Mm.
That was owned by a couple. But included within their rent fee, if you like, was an amount they had to pay a management company every year. They meant to come out and maintain the gardens and do the paint, the hallways. Mm. Yeah, just generally look after the building and
take
care
of it.
Mm. Yeah, the firm who, I forget where they were and even what they were called, but they were pretty useless, actually. They used to take a load of money and not do very much for it. But it's an absolute minefield, I think, lettings. For both landlords, in fairness, and tenants, because there are, from the landlord's perspective, there are rogue tenants out there who will use every excuse under the sun that they can not to pay their rent.
Mm.
And in fairness, actually, I understand quite often that is, you've mentioned TikTok and some of the social media things, Facebook, there are now experts on that kind of teach people how to blag and play the system so you can...
Oh, really?
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. They're experts at teaching people how to avoid it. But from the tenant's perspective, equally, there are rogue landlords as well subletting going on. It's an absolute minefield. So I'm just curious, Pete, your company, I understand, I think, what you were saying about the tenants get together, or the owners of the apartments on block management.
Yeah.
The owners of the apartments get together. They will appoint directors.
Yep.
And it's the directors then that come to your company, PJS.
So we deal directly with the directors.
Yes, okay.
In theory, we don't deal with leaseholders, but in reality, they eventually find out who we are.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And if there's any issues, they contact us and we deal with them. Always keep the directors in the loop, though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's amazing. Even some of the smallest things that you would... we used to live on the top floor and looking out over the River Medway. It's beautiful. Oh. Yeah, it sounds lovely.
Mm.
And some people moving in the apartment and underneath us who couldn't be bothered to take their bin bags out to the bin area at the far end of the building. Yeah. They started storing their bin bags just outside, right outside their front door.
Yeah. Oh, no.
So when you come home... or visitors come to visit you. They've got to be walking past people's. Yeah, it's a minefield. It's. I think you're a brave man for being involved in it. Deserve all the credit.
We do enjoy it.
If you can be good in that marketplace, then you've got to be doing something right.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Well, as I say, we've been there since the early 90s.
Oh, wow.
And we still manage that estate.
Yeah, fantastic.
Oh. Yeah.
Well done.
But I have to say though, lots of estate managing companies will move on after 5-10 years time.
Yeah, yeah.
It's because either the directors want to look at the budget in terms of savings or move on.
Mm.
Maybe there are issues or new directors come on board.
Yep.
Maybe they want a different approach.
Yep.
So they do actually move on.
Yeah, yeah.
So we don't keep everybody 100% of the time, but we do we provide lots of services and the more that we require.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yeah. Hedge cutting, painting, maintenance, it's they've all different aspects. I mean, like the roof as well. It's roofs as of mold, the blocks that you're talking about.
Apartment buildings. Go from old properties, and I mean listed, grade two listed buildings, to brand new blocks.
Right, okay. Is this residential?
It's all residential.
I was at a meeting not so long ago. It was aligned to a political party that we won't talk about. There were a lot of people there who you might think at first glance were asking questions about a particular subject, but that, funnily enough, that subject didn't come up. So a subject did come up from, I'm trying to think actually, it was, he must have been a Maidstone resident. He was inquiring about the number of buildings in Maidstone that are currently are commercial being converted to residential, and in particular, actually, he was paying particular attention to the listed properties, and he was asking if the protections that are gifted or awarded to listed buildings is being considered during the conversion process from commercial to residential, and apparently it was something that was something that they were aware of, but I'm thinking managing that, it's commercial properties that were listed, I have now been moved across to residential.
I mean, obviously, you're managing a listed property, and it'd be interesting to know how much, I should imagine, that doesn't need a lot of external work at all. And the structure of the building is probably just so solid compared to all the newer buildings you're dealing with for the estates.
Totally different.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Because the newer buildings are really made up of fibre boards. So every 5-10 years, just need a jet wash. Older buildings need a lot of maintenance.
Oh, they do, more maintenance. More
so. I mean, because it's so old, you end up having to do all the new lead work, possibly a new roof. The gutters may need changing, fascia boards might need redoing, windowsills need repainting. So a lot of that needs to be done. Modern buildings, UPVC.
John knows people who do all the metalwork and everything. It would speak to him.
Yeah.
You've definitely got people who can do all that. Thank you so much, Peter. So so if somebody wants to get hold of you, obviously there's links to you on our website as you're a sponsor, but also there's links to you on the radio, I know, as well. Yeah. So how can people get hold of you, please?
Well, I'm on the website, which is www.pjjs.co.uk. And of course, always on my mobile, but Monday to Friday, 9 till 5, although after hours I always take calls. 07855 746 966.
Lovely. Thank you, Peter. That's really interesting, isn't it? What a diverse range of businesses. So yeah, I'm going to... I'm just going to mention some events and things. So I've just had Nina, who is one of our members in Medway. So she is a representative of WPA, and they've got a networking event on the 27th, and it's at Deangate Ridge Golf Club. Do you know that, Rochester?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So it's starting there. They're looking to, the same 5,000, no, oh, £5,000 donation per person.
Not a 5,000.
I'm thinking, God, no one's going to go 5,000 for a network. £5 donation per person. Starts at 9:30 in the morning. Meet ready to walk, because basically they're meeting at 9:30, ready to walk at 9:45. As you know, we do networking events, and the WPA representative in Maidstone, who is Gareth Walters, absolutely loves them, supports them every single month. So it doesn't surprise me that they're doing this as an event, because, you know, they are brilliant. And you can take your dog as well, which is fantastic.
But you do know Deangate Ridge Golf Club has closed down, and it's now a country walk.
Oh, maybe that's why they're doing it.
I think they're talking about the Ridge Golf Club. In
Mates. No, this is the...
No, this Deangate. Is Deangate in Rochester.
Okay. Yeah. Oh, okay.
No, yeah. I'm a member of the Ridge, so I do know about it.
You must know Tony Butcher, then.
Yes, I do.
So I think he's my sales director.
So hopefully that's not closing then, Peter.
No. Just a life member, so Tony, make sure.
It was Tony that taught me about etiquette, so I'll tell you about that off air, though. Shout out for Tony.
Okay, so another one I want to let you know about is... the event that's taking place at Rowhill Grange. So we were speaking about Rowhill Grange earlier because Mark went there in 2012.
I did.
We don't know why. We'll talk about that afterwards as well. So it's Beams Corporate Networking Luncheon. Now, I can guarantee this is going to be amazing. It's £28, includes grazing luncheon. Well, we have grazing in the evening. So June the 11th, 12 p.m. to 2 p.m. at Rowhill Grange, which is Top Dartford Road, DA27QH. So treat yourselves. You're helping the charity We Are Beams. I was up there actually on Monday, and I was looking around We Are Beams because we are part of iTrust. And what iTrust is an app, and it helps people to give feedback anonymously about your business. And it also helps staff to give feedback anonymously, which is a really useful tool for big businesses like your two businesses. And people, basically our members give feedback on that, but also they wanted it for staff and they wanted it for parents, We Are Beams. So it makes sense for charities as well. So Nick Inge developed the app, and it's really great, but we pay for it every month, and We Are Beams actually gets a quarter of the money we pay is donated to them. Mm-hmm. So it's only... it's only a small amount, but every little helps, doesn't it? So, but this event, their Christmas event, is where I actually met our shoe, and we now run our events from Rowhill Grange. Our next event there is on the 30th, so that's amazing. But I also wanted to let you know about another couple of things. So we've actually got the Rookie Club, Rookie CEO. I think you've been there, Ali, haven't you?
I've been there once, yeah.
Yep, so that's on Monday the 27th. So Rookie is a different type. They say it's not really networking. What they do is they get people to stand up and do a talk. They get someone to do a talk about wellness. Someone do like a business tip talk, a generally 10 to 15 minute presentation. Great place to meet startups. They have quite a few startups there. But also we network. it's networking, guys. So if you fancy a little bit of networking, bumping into people chatting away, and all of the money, all of the proceeds you pay to go, and all of the proceeds go to Heart of Kent Hospice. So really good cause, and the guys that run this are fantastic. Then on Tuesday morning, we're at Riverside Church, which is in Whitstable. And Riverside Church is also a charity, but they've got fantastic conferencing facilities there. Just amazing. If you want a conferencing facility down in East Kent, then this is your venue. So Charlie Lees is the manager there, and he's really turned things around down there. We held a massive event there, and it was absolutely brilliant. Come along and see us 10:30 on Tuesday morning. That's on Tuesday the 28th, which is next Tuesday. Oh, tomorrow night we've got Steph. She does pints and Prosecco, and that's in the Boathouse, which is in Rochester. You live near there, don't you?
Near there.
You don't go out in the evening, do you?
Depends on the company.
Well, anyway, it's really nice. Pints and Prosecco is a very social event. You know, they're getting busier and busier. They really, you know, do attract some new businesses there as well. It's just a social networking event, and it's really easy and laid back. So both of those, the Rookie and Pints and Prosecco, two fantastic events. So Pints and Prosecco is the 23rd, and that's tomorrow night at the Boathouse, which is in Rochester Canal Road. Then we've been asked by Metro Bank to work with Metro Bank, and we are working with them. So on the 29th, which is Wednesday, I've got a very busy week next week, an event every day. So we've got Metro Bank at 9:30 in the morning in Ashford, and that's a free event. So if you wanted to come along to that, that's 9:30 on Wednesday morning. And again, Metro Bank invite all of their customers, and obviously I invite my members. So it's a really good mix of businesses there. So definitely worth it. And then Jill and I are doing the radio show next week in the afternoon with an Arshu from Rowhill Grange. She's going to be on the show. So really looking forward to that. And then on the 30th, we are at Rowhill Grange in Dartford. So it's very appropriate that she's actually on the show the week before. Then I'd also like to let you know about a couple of events in May. So sorry I'm giving you so many, but we are at Metro Bank again in Canterbury on Wednesday the 13th of May. And that's at 10 a.m. in the morning, because they said traffic in Canterbury is diabolical. So we're actually starting there at 10 a.m. But then also the Arida Hotel, who helped us put our company on the map, really, by asking us to help them promote their conferencing facilities. They we're actually doing a summit there. So it's Kent Networking Summit, and it's on Thursday, the 28th of May, and that's from 10:30 until 2:30. We'll have speakers there, so we're looking for sponsors. So if anyone's interested in being a sponsor of that event, then they can come along and they can speak to 100 plus. So we're looking for sponsors who've got good speakers. We want some good speakers there. And then last but not least, we're working Wadhurst Castle, which is actually going to be our first Sussex event. And we're doing a summer solstice evening. So that's 5:30 on Wednesday, the 17th of June. And Wadhurst Castle was supplying welcome drinks and also little canopies. So that's going to be a really lovely event. And Hazel Hall, she's actually inviting people and running the event. I think you're booked into that, aren't you?
I am. Yeah, it's confirmed.
Oh, fantastic.
I'm looking forward to it.
Okay. Are you coming with Helen?
I'll talk to you about it halfway.
Okay, so that's going to be a really great
lots
event.
Lots of off-air going on.
I know. So that's 5:30, but the Arida has literally just been booked yesterday, so that's the 28th. So we will be talking about it again next week and getting more feedback. But that's going to be three sets of 36 people. You'll be networking synergy style. And it's really interesting. I don't know if any of you have been using AI, have you?
I try not to.
No. I have been a little bit, yes, indeed.
It's got its place. Okay.
So I've been using it because I've been doing a handbook, which you know, Ali. So I've been doing a handbook, an operational handbook, and AI thought we were called Synergy Style Networking because I kept talking about networking Synergy Style. So it just naturally assumed that the name was Synergy Style Networking. So I had to correct it and say, no, we're Synergy Networking Events. Yeah. But it was really interesting to see how AI interpreted things. So I spoke to AI and got it to do the operational handbook without giving away our secret, our copywritten secret. So it was very clever because I had to keep on sort of telling it to do things without giving away the secret. We have together, me and AI. I haven't given him a name yet, or her. But we've written this handbook, and it basically is an operational handbook that describes how we run our events. And you're talking about paper. This handbook is like about 20 pages.
Oh, wow.
Just to run an event. Mm. How amazing is that?
How many do you need each event?
How many pages?
How many copies?
One. One. So it's an operational handbook. Just need the one. Yeah. Okay. So we would give one, but we're going to have to give massive training and everything to the people who are running the events.
So you'll need a few hundred of those then.
We will. Yeah. Oh, I see.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In
yes. Yes, we will. Do you print them as well then?
Absolutely.
Remember my business partner.
We didn't talk about the bureau, but we'll talk about that another time.
Yeah, well, remember my business partner is actually a printer.
Oh, okay.
He can help you with that one.
There you go. Okay, we'll talk about that off air as well.
Chris Endersby, Grammar Printers. Yeah. Just give him a little bit of a shout out.
Okay, I know them.
It's, you know them?
Yeah,
yeah,
I do.
It's, yeah, brilliant. They do a lot of stuff for, lots of people, actually. So, Peter, you network, and you network with a very old networking group. Do they not call themselves
a very long-standing networking?
Very long-standing networking. Do they call it networking? Or do they call it "you scratch my back, I'll scratch yours"? What do they call it?
I'm not sure what you're referring to.
Masons, of course.
The old group. You're absolutely right. They've been going around for more than 300 years.
I know.
So yes, it's not what you know; it's who you know. But to be perfectly honest, we have never, ever done business through the Masons.
No, I know you don't do business through the Masons, but you do. So networking, I always say to people, because when I get people come to me, new networkers, and they say, there's nobody in here I want to meet, I'm like, oh. It's like people when they used to come to the dating events, but I don't like the look of anyone in here. We'll talk to them and you might like them, you know, but that's the same as networking. Now, what you are doing really in the Masons is you are networking through the room. You're building relationships by going there on a regular basis, raising money for charity.
Yeah.
Different people do different things. You get to see their personalities.
Yeah.
And so in a way, it is, isn't it? Do you agree? Well, or?
No, I do, in a way.
Mm.
You're absolutely right. What's very interesting is the people you sit next to are totally different type of individuals, what they do, how they do things. I think not far after the Falklands War, I was sitting next to a veteran who was actually involved with the Falklands War. Absolutely brilliant guy. The other side of me was a Vulcan pilot.
Wow.
And the diverse conversations, and you have that conversation going on. So you're right. But people I have met, not just through masonry, but having specifically been in there, plumbers.
Mm-hmm.
I know some very good masons who are plumbers. And I can call on them if I need any help.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a relationship you build up with Masons. And you're right, with other businesses, people you get to know and you work with, and they become very confident in what they do. And
because so you learn to trust them at the event, don't
absolutely.
You? Because you get to know. Yeah. So you're not actually talking business in the Masons. You're doing something completely different. But you get to know those people, and through getting to know them, you get to trust them.
Yeah.
And that's what we, all the people, like Chamber of Commerce, BNI, Bob, NATO, you know, I list loads of them. That's what they're all trying to achieve. Sometimes some businesses don't understand that concept, and they look at networking and they look at it as a short win, not actually.
Yeah, but the thing with Masons, though, it's more the development of the individual.
Yes.
Because they come in and they end up being a better person because they know the value of life. They're working harder. They understand what's going on. And, I mean, charity, to me, was always a prominent thing, but it's not. It's the actual development of the individual.
Okay. Yeah. And how would you say it develops them then?
Actually, being in an audience, having to be able to stand up, speak for themselves, be able to project themselves, they understand people, and communication.
Mm-hmm.
But what they learn in part of the ritual, I'm not giving any secrets away, they actually evolve when they become better people.
Mm.
And it really is an interesting subject.
Well, wouldn't you say, Ali, that people become better people when they come networking? Not better people, I don't know that's the right term, but more confident people.
Oh, certainly, certainly. I mean, I've definitely met people at networking that, you know, the first time you see them, you can see that they feel out of their depth. They're, you know, they're not used to doing it. And then you see them maybe a few months later and they're there and they're doing their thing. And you just, if you reflect back on it and you just think, you can see such a difference in them. And I certainly think, yeah, that coming along to networking events, and I think potentially going to different types of networking events, you start to understand what brings the best out in you in terms of building those relationships. And I think different networking events work for different people, don't they, in different ways. But yeah, so definitely.
And what I mean, you know, if how many different ones have you been to? Have you been to chamber ones? And
I mean, over the years, with the travel business, because it is still a fairly new business for me, I've been to two or three. I'm with Synergy now. Mm-hmm. I went to an all-women's networking group prior to that, which for me just didn't quite, it wasn't what I needed.
Need some alphas in the room.
Yeah. I need some of that butting heads. And no, I just need that. I'm just not very girly, am I really? I haven't been to the Invicta yet because I haven't been able to get to any of their dates, unfortunately. I've been to the Rookie CEO. I've done the Rookie. Yeah. So I've tried, and I have tried a couple of others that shall remain nameless that really were not for me. Mm. So I've been around a few different types, and I do find that, yeah, it's very much I respond to some and others I come away just thinking, no, that wasn't for me. I didn't get anything from it, because I think when you're meeting people, you always get something from it. Mm. But I just felt that, you know, it wasn't going to be a long-term thing for me. I didn't feel that it was the right environment for me and the place that I was going to nurture those relationships.
Funny you saying that. I mean, I was involved with BNI many, many years ago. Mm. I used to go to Westmorling.
Yes.
And I got, I think maybe on one occasion, 10 referrals going out to people.
Mm.
But I never got anything back. Mm. And I found maybe what I was looking for wasn't quite suitable.
How long did you go there for?
2 years.
Mm. I mean, I went there for 2 years when I was dating agency. Yeah. After 18 months, I changed my category to social media. And it was really weird because obviously they teach you to be specific. And I remember having a major argument with the owner then of BNI. And basically he said to me, you need to be specific. And I'm like, you know, what do I say to people? You know, is your neighbour divorced? You know, how can you be specific? Oh, I've heard this person has just got divorced. You know, can I have a referral to him, please? You know, how are they going to give that referral?
Yeah.
And he was like, well, don't be ridiculous. You're looking for venues, you know, get referrals into venues. I said, yeah, but that's not the referral. That's not going to make me any money. That's not really the type of referral I want. But then when I changed to We Do Social Media, it still took a long time because I had to build the trust. Although I knew those people and I'd been with them for 2 years, I would say it took me another 2 years, definitely, to build the trust within BNI, for them to have the confidence in me to go from a dating agency to suddenly supplying social media. They needed that, and then I started coming, and then it definitely paid off, you know, big time. But that took 4 years.
But when I went to somebody's property many years ago, I was talking to him, he needed a carpet cleaner, then something to do with a chimney sweep, we needed somebody in there. And as I was walking out, new windows, and all these referrals are coming out. But
they loved you.
But I suppose with my line of business, nothing was coming back.
Yeah.
And I couldn't find, because you're right, maybe I was looking for something bigger than what people, and I find with things like BNI and everything else, they're more individuals trying to develop the business rather than large companies.
Yeah, that's exactly my experience.
Yeah, you do find that with some of them. And that I would say that we're coming out somewhere in the middle because the chamber tends to attract much bigger businesses.
IODs, we're doing the same.
Yeah, I mean, but we have now got businesses in Synergy with over 250 staff.
Yeah.
So, you know, we're attracting the startups right the way through to the corporates. We had Kier Construction at King's Hill last week.
I hear your name a lot. I hear the name, both as an individual and the Synergy name as well.
Yay.
So lots of people are talking about you. So.
I mean, obviously, I'm really, really fortunate because everywhere I go, everyone's a potential for me. Yeah. It doesn't matter whether they're like part of a big corporation or whether or not they're just an individual sort of like, you know, start up on their own or whatever. So I'm fortunate in that respect when I go networking that everyone's a potential client.
But I mean, what I learned over the years, and BNI is really good at training, is that you know, being specific doesn't necessarily mean naming someone. It's more like, can you please listen out for somebody who said they'd love to go to Australia?
Yeah.
Can you listen out for somebody who said that they really want to take their mum away for the weekend, or their husband's birthday is coming up, or, you know, so it's they were very good at training you. I really did find that. Did you?
I've got to say Synergy, I think, after all of them, is one of the best ones I've been to.
Oh, thank you, Peter.
My praise.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I worked, you know, the format is very different, isn't it?
Yeah.
And
it's unique.
It is totally unique, yeah. And the great thing is, bless BNI's heart, you know, everyone can copy it because it was created by the members. But, ours is top secret format.
There is a caveat on that, though.
Oh,
sometimes, you know, you could be on the table. You say the kind of people we're looking for earlier, and I said, but everybody. You know, if I had 20 people come to me looking for like small desktop printers like that little brother out the front.
No.
It's not really ideal. And you do get, as Peter just mentioned there, a lot of kind of startups and things like that. But if I've just come full circle on that, I said earlier, there isn't one networking group that's all things to all people.
No.
You've kind of all got your place for all of the individuals. But I love you for that. I'm a huge fan.
I actually think what you could say is, you know, when someone says, what are you looking for? I think you could say, I'm looking for somebody who's looking to move offices or to refurb.
Yeah, it's funny to say that, actually. We've had a meeting this week with somebody that does that. So.
Well, we've just taken...
And that'll open all the doors for you in terms of the printers...
Everything.
Our Q codes and everything.
So we're going to start giving monthly resources to members. So you're lucky, you're a member, you'll get a resource.
I love it.
So, but one of our new members is Tracy Green from Enerflow Interiors. Have you met her at the chamber?
The name, I recognise the name. I don't recall seeing her at an event though.
So she was at the last Synergy event in Kings Hill. She's going to be, that's her home group, so she'll regularly be there now.
Yeah.
So I'll introduce you to her next time because she would be fantastic, because she actually goes in and, you know, finds the place for them and kits it all out with furniture, but she doesn't do any of the IT or anything.
Yeah.
So I actually have introduced her to Michael Marshall, who does drones. Do you ever need drones?
We do.
So he do you need drones?
No, I know Michael.
Oh.
It goes on a bit.
Yeah. Not
all
very.
Right.
So, drones. Oh, God.
Yeah, you had to explain that one, didn't you? I got it.
I'm sorry you had to explain it to me, Mark.
Sorry, Michael. Yeah. We do surveys using drones as well.
Of course do you do. Yeah, absolutely.
So who are you using at the moment?
Ourselves.
Oh, you do it yourself? Yeah. What, do you fly the drone?
I do.
Wow.
Oh, right.
I have a CA registered application.
It's fantastic. Brilliant.
Yeah.
Oh.
So please let me know if you need any drones.
There you go.
Wow, okay. So, well.
It's another story, Michael.
Yeah, sorry. Yeah. Well, that's the thing.
Big market, though.
All businesses have crossovers, don't they? They have those crossovers. And it's recognising where, like, if you're too busy to do something, you could call on Michael.
Yeah.
If Michael's busy, he could call on you.
Do you know something? What you've just described there, I've actually heard Michael talking about that exact scenario there. So you're spot on.
So that's the whole beauty
of
networking.
It's all going to be property related there.
Yeah. Well, he did, when we were down at Whitstable.
Yes.
He
was flying his drone.
He was flying his drone. Yeah. And he did a whole fantastic, I don't know if he's contacted the Crescent Turner Hotel, another beautiful hotel. Mm. I don't know if he's contacted them in regards to, you know, letting them use it for their marketing or...
I'm sure he probably would. He would have been missed a trick if he hasn't, wouldn't
he? I did tag them into all of the posts. So so I just want to ask you all again, we've got another 10 minutes on the show, but Ali, if somebody's looking for an amazing holiday where everything is planned for them and they want to go, you know, to Machu Picchu or Japan or see the Northern Lights, how do they get hold of you?
I'm just having to sit here and write down my number because me and numbers do not always go very well together, and I get my phone numbers mixed up all the time, my personal phone number and my work phone number. So I'm just trying to have a look at it here.
There's a solution that can help you with that, Ali.
What, help me with my brain, remembering numbers no, and with not the phone. Switching them it's, around?
No, with the phone.
Yeah, yeah. So definitely, obviously, I'm on LinkedIn under Ali Whelan, as I said, Facebook, Ali Whelan personal page, or also Bags of Pack Travel is my business page. I'm on WhatsApp. Most of the time, it's the easiest way. You can message me through there or put messages on. And I believe that my telephone number, hang on, I am just going to have to double check this because I always get the last two digits round the wrong way, is 07 077 26 28 6930. I'm hoping.
No, it's not. It's 07 76 26 28 6903. 903,
I told you.
So I'll just repeat that again. So Ali's number is 07 76 26 28 6903.
And it's because my personal number is 930 and it freaks me out.
Don't tell everyone that.
No, the rest of it's different. The rest of it's different. But okay. Yeah, it freaks me out every time. But that's the easiest way to get me, yeah. Sorry.
That's fantastic.
About that.
That's all right. Well done. So, you know, Ali can help you plan your holiday and, you know, achieve your dreams and tick off that old bucket list.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah.
Fantastic.
Everyone should do more travelling. Mm.
They should. I know, everyone I agree. I'd like to take my grandson on more little breaks away. Bless him. Peter.
Yes.
Thank you so much for coming on the show. How can people get hold of you?
One of your sponsors. I should have come more regularly.
Oh, exactly. That's why I invited you.
Thank you.
Fire away then. How can people get hold of you?
Well, again, I'm on the website, which is pjjs.co.uk.
Mm-hmm.
And my personal email, which will get me 24/7, although officially after 5 o'clock in the evening. But I do get messages. 07855 746 966.
Okay, fantastic. Yeah. Always available. So if anyone knows of anyone who wants to let their property.
Or estate management. Finds that there's a director who requires more services, we're here to help.
Fantastic.
I think just on Peter's business there, actually, there's, like with what we do, there's plenty of people out there that have actually already got what we do.
Yes.
But they're dealing with people that aren't very good at it. Like I was describing when we were in that apartment building, management company is pretty poor. So,
How much competition have you got out there? Do you know?
Oh, quite a lot. There is quite a lot. However, the larger the companies, they're very poor in providing service because the head office is either Hereford or, you know, Luton.
Oh.
And when they have their service managers coming in to help, they don't get the backup. This is a problem. They're very good at communicating. The problem is when they need the servicing, i.e. to spend money, they don't get the support, where we are hands-on and we can immediately react.
So what is your area that you cover?
Kent.
So just Kent?
Kent. I mean, we have looked at going into London and we have been approached. But the trouble is you could go into London and spend 2-3 hours travelling for half an hour's job. And then you come all the way back again. You spend
congestion charge.
Absolutely.
Yeah, pollution charge.
So we deal with Kent.
Mm.
Anywhere in Kent, within 45 minutes from Maidstone.
Okay. Yeah. And do you have an area or not really, Ali?
No, it's pretty much wherever people come to me from. I've got clients up in Scotland because my other half is Scottish and we've got lots of Scottish friends and so they get in touch with me. So I've got people down in Devon. Do have quite a lot from sort of like Herne Bay, Whitstable, Kent, Canterbury area, but no, wherever.
Because that's where you network.
Exactly.
Yeah. It works. Yeah. Okay, Mark.
That's all right. You okay? Need a drink?
No. Yes, I do.
My contact details?
Yes, please, yeah.
Yeah, okay. People can call the office 01892 664155. They can call a direct dial. 01892 600 230. Yeah, 01892 600.
Whereabouts is your office?
We're actually in Crowborough, just the other side of Tunbridge Wells. There, very nice. Yeah, Crowborough. Mm. We cover the southeast. But again, I feel. I'm going to be honest with you. A little sense of guilt actually, because I'm letting out secrets being out on the radio. The Newman I describe as one of the biggest secrets kept in our industry because we are really good at what we do. And the people start dealing with us. I'm not going to mention names of who the customers are, but they deal with us within our primary area of the southeast, they'd move out of that area and say, well, no, we still want to deal with you.
Yeah.
That's nice. That's proof of the pudding, isn't it?
It's, yeah. But you know, when I say the we do the right thing by people, I mean, at the start of COVID, that got mentioned earlier. I remember a company had signed up with us for three machines in something like November of 2019. They were a travel company as well, by the way. Ah. They employed 135 staff across two floors of a tower building in London. Yeah, then March 20 came and COVID struck. And they went from 125 odd staff down to 15.
Yeah. Oh,
yeah. And they got these three machines now stuck on a lease. Yeah, they said to me, look, what can we do? And I said, well, the lease is the lease. You're going to have to speak to the leasing company about that. But the service contract, that is as. I'll speak to our service director and see what we can do on it. And they signed a 5-year agreement with us.
Yeah.
I spoke to the service director. He looked at it. He said, look, what we've built, that's already covered our cost. He said, tell them, we want to see them out the other side of this, so we'll actually just tear the agreement up. There's nothing more to pay. The agreement was terminated. We kept their machines in storage at our warehouse in Crowborough. That customer continued to trade. Since then, we've actually given them title of the machines at the end of it. So because they carried on paying the lease, we wanted to make sure they got something from it. So we gave them some of the machines, and we've re-established service contracts on those machines now because they sat there for so long. Although they're 5 years old, they've done nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Like a 5-year-old car that's done 200 miles or something.
Yeah. Oh,
so
we're
just good people to do business with, you know. We just do the right thing for people.
That's really good.
People deal with us because they choose and want to rather than because they're contractually bound to.
Yeah.
That's Newman Business Solutions.
I mean, that's exactly what we did in terms of our photocopiers.
There you go.
We ended up going to Canon. There's another company who took over from them.
Yeah.
We ended up having to terminate the agreement.
Yeah. And paid them off?
We paid them off.
Yeah, yeah. And they took them back.
Yes, they did.
Yeah, yeah. Fair enough.
So. Fantastic. Thank you so much, guys. And thank you so much, everyone, for listening. If you want to listen again, then there's a link actually on Kent Business Radio. Go to the networking show. And